The Positude Podcast, a one-hour show to bring joy, balance, and happiness to you and to negate the negativity in your life.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome once again to another episode of the Positude Podcast. My name is Ira Robinson. As always, we are here with the inimitable, the amazing, the wonderful Maggie Hart. Hello, Maggie.
Wow, what an introduction. Our ratings must be up again. I love you, Ira.
Love you too. How you doing, Maggie?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself? Hey, we have snow in the forecast today. I mean, it's what, April 14th? Is that not ridiculous?
Yeah, it is. I've been enjoying the wonderful weather that we've had here over the past 2 days. And then, of course, Indiana went bipolar and it turned into 30 degrees here today. We had 75 yesterday and 35 today. I hate nature sometimes.
I know. My girlfriend was up to like almost 80. They were going shooting yesterday afternoon. And then she's like, it's supposed to get cold again. I'm like, yeah, well, we have snow, so I don't want to hear it. She was up to 70s, mid-70s this week. I'm so jealous. But anyway, jumping right into Veterans Affairs.
We met as soulmates on Paris Island. We left as inmates from an asylum. And we were sharp as knives. And we were so gung-ho to lay down.
Chris Mintz, this is an older story. He's about 30 months old. Chris Mintz is the current military man of the hour. He's a 10-year veteran of the United States Army, but became national news when he protected classmates in a shooting rampage at a local community college that he was attending. And the community college was actually UMQA, U-M-P-Q-U-A, Community College. So I thought it was important to share his story. We've been hearing quite a few of these going around. It's not really in mainstream media when a gunman protects himself or a person protects themselves from a shooter. But, we've heard some stories about this. And because he's a veteran, I figured let's give him some recognition. So basically, according to eyewitnesses, what happened was he ran at the attacker and blocked a door to a classroom in the attempt to follow or to protect fellow classmates. According to a student witness, he ran to the library and pulled all of the alarms, was telling people to run. He actually ran back towards the building where the shooting was and back into the building. While attempting to stop the shooter, Mintz was shot an incredible 7 times. He was rushed to surgery, but he'll require a great deal of recuperative care. And to repay his heroism, they set up a GoFundMe. And it was originally set up for $10,000. I just looked at it, and he's exceeded that goal by far. I want to say, let me see if I can find it. He received $819,725,000 out of his $10,000 goal. So good for him. He deserves it. But the money was initially intended to go toward his medical expenses because it wasn't something that was going to be covered by the VA. But that did not stop an army of supporters from contributing to his page, and it's still active. So that's my story for the week, Veterans Affairs. It's not a very lengthy one, but it's another example of a veteran being heroic and performing an act that, you know, very potentially he could have lost and almost did lose his life over. So what do you think about that one?
Well, you know, just like cops and firefighters and EMS and veterans, you know, people that are in the military, I've always got to give, you know, my hats off to people that have in their hearts, you know, when there is danger, when there is something that's going on, when there is somebody that's being hurt, they're the ones that are running into the issues as opposed to running away from. That's amazing.
Yeah, I thought so too. And he definitely deserves recognition. Think outside the Raggedy Box. I kind of tried to change it up a little bit. You know, we've tried going from the middle of a scenario, then going from the end of a scenario and working your way backwards, drawing. We've had many different think outside the Raggedy Boxes. But this one I thought was kind of interesting and different because it's asking you to consider the worst case scenario so that you can prepare yourself if that were to happen, and, you know, kind of how to come back from something like that, how to regroup after something like that if it were to happen. So for the ad person, let's say if you're doing advertising, you might consider what will happen if you try to implement a creative new scheme to offer incentives for long-time advertising partners. You know, for instance, better placement in a layout, a full-color ad for a reduced price or something like that. And then the worst that potentially could happen is that nobody would take the offer, right, or that you'd lose money because of it. So come up with a plan for how you might deal with those potential setbacks. And for writers, for instance, your worst case scenario might be that nobody picks you up, not a publisher or an agent wants to market your novel. So what would you do if that were the case? What would you do if no one were interested in your novel? Would you go back to maybe self-publishing and then, you know, advertising yourself? How would you handle the worst case scenario?
Go into my closet and cry.
What's that?
Go into my closet and cry.
So, and I have to apologize because of the weather, my allergies are acting up, so I sound a little nasally today. But that, I think, it's a good way to prepare yourself for the worst-case scenario in case it happens. Of course, we don't want that to happen. We don't anticipate for that to happen. But if it were to happen, it's a way to prepare ourselves and then be able to, you know, bounce back from that a little bit more quickly because we have a background plan. So what do you think about that one?
Well, it's the old adage, you know, prepare for the worst and hope for the best. I've always been a big advocate of the plan B kind of scenarios. You always want to do that kind of thing. And, you know, when it comes to like your bills and budgeting and all that kind of stuff, you know, it's the thought of always overestimating, you know, what you're going to have to come out so that when things happen that are unforeseen, you're already prepared to be laying out those kind of things anyways. So, you know, when you have that kind of mentality with everything that you do, it really does help to get through the times that come up that are unexpected. Again, those untoward situations or those unforeseen moments can really kick your butt if you're not having a plan B in place, and you don't really want to get your butt kicked. So, you know, have your butt in the chair and ready.
Absolutely. And I try and do that myself. You know, if I'm working out a game plan for a new project or something that I have, I always try and have that, as you call it, plan B, that backup plan, that escape
right.
hatch, that should it fall through, okay, well, if that falls through, I'll do this, you know? And it just helps with preparedness. I think it's a different route. We want to stay positive, absolutely.
Yeah.
We absolutely want to stay positive.
Well, and that falls into what I was going to mention too. You know, it's very important also to bear in mind, you know, the thing that I always have to say, worry really is a useless emotion. If there's something that's going on that you're worried about, change the thing that you're worried about, you know, so that you no longer have to worry about it, right? But if it's something that you can't change or something that you can't do anything about, stop worrying about it because it's not going to do you any good anyways. You may as well just, you know, hunker down, weather the storm. Everything will pass. It's going to be okay.
Absolutely. And maintaining that positive attitude throughout, you know, we've talked about this a zillion times before, you know, negativity creates disease in the body. So having that positive attitude, but having a backup plan or a plan B definitely will help you to come back more quickly, to bounce back more quickly, and even become more potentially successful. I don't even know. I could tell you stories of people that have contacted me that have had setbacks that they thought were initially devastating to them. But further down the road, what ended up happening was they get an even better offer, or something better would come along and fall into their lap.
It's happened to me.
Rocketed and propelled them even farther than their wildest dreams would have initially, right?
It's so, happened to me. I can give you a perfect example. I can give you a perfect example. Look at me. I'm blind, you know, and those first few months after I was given, you know, the diagnosis, given the final say on, you know, you can't work anymore. There's nowhere that you can go. You know, you're going to be on disability, so on and so forth. Those moments were really devastating to me because I've always been a very, you know, workaholic kind of person. I loved working, you know, and so I was very devastated. And what I discovered after that happened was that, wow, wait a minute. I actually have time now to do writing. And that was something that I've wanted to do since I was a child, to become a, you know, a pro writer, a professional published author. And lo and behold, you know, now that I've got the time on my hands, quote unquote, I'm using that time as my workaholic kind of thing to do with my writing of my books. So yes, I mean, I got hit with this diagnosis. I've got the vision problems that I do. And yes, that is a royal pain in the butt to deal with on a daily basis. But I don't let it get me down either. I do everything that I can do to make the best of my situation, no matter what it is.
Absolutely. And that's the attitude to have. And it's funny because you hit it right on the head. You were able to do something that you wanted to do your entire life. You're actually realizing your dreams. You found a way to make it happen. And, you know, that goes with me too. How many years I spent in a very thankless, very hostile, very toxic, very just mean, and very, very deceptive work environment. I mean, I worked with some of the nastiest people that I've ever met in my life, honestly. And, you know, they'll look right at you and smile at you and lie right to your face. It was just absolutely horrible. And for me, coming into the spiritual warfare work, coming into, the two books, that was probably the start of it, was doing the two children's books and then following that path and, you know, continuing that. And when I left my job that was that way and found something else that was much more beneficial to me, I'm now able to flex my hours. I can, you know, I have so much more give, that it allowed me to start my online classes for my full 2-year ministerial degree. It allowed me to get to cases that I had in the books for 2-3 months that normally I wouldn't be able to touch for 2 to 3 months. I was able to bang out, you know, a whole bunch of cases in a 2-week period and catch up my workload and be able to interact with people more, spend more time with people on the help that they needed, develop the spiritual warfare aspect more, do the podcast, do more with the podcast. It's just blossomed as a result of that. And so what initially maybe wasn't the best thing, you know, maybe a lot of people would say that wasn't your best career move. For me, it's been the best possible route that I could have taken because I am so incredibly happy now. You know, there's no stress. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't have all of that. I'm able to do what I want when I want to do it. Yeah, things get tight sometimes. Sometimes things get stressful, just like anybody else. But I'm able to roll with it. You know what I mean?
But Maggie, let me interrupt for just a second here. I mean, you're on a great roll, but let me interrupt for just a second here because you made a really good point there. They were saying that this wasn't the best career move for you. But the thing is, Our lives are not our careers. This was not a career move. This was a life move. You see what I mean? And that's what's so important for people, because so many people get so wrapped up in the fact of, well, I'm this career. No. That's just your job. That's not you. That's not your life. Something completely different.
It's not your mission.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. Absolutely. It's not your mission. So when you figure out what your mission is and what you're supposed to be doing, and for me, I'd known that for, 10 years? Easily. 15, maybe? I just wasn't able to. I mean, I was. I was able to do both, you know, on a 60 to 80-hour pace, right? Now, I still work a lot of hours between my job and my ministry and my spiritual work and my helping people, you know, helping homeless, helping veterans, all of that. But I'm able to coordinate everything better, and the time that I'm spending is on the things that matter to me.
Right.
Things that are making a real difference in people's lives.
Right, whereas exactly.
Before, yeah, it just wasn't satisfying at all.
I work harder.
And I'm not around those people anymore. I'm not around, as a general rule, I encounter them, you know, in the work that I do. I have people that have, you know, abusive spouses or, you know, people that are up against, you know, trying to fight for benefits from the VA and they're not getting any help and those people are, you know, rude to them on the phone, things like that. I mean, I encounter people like that, but I'm not around them 8 hours a day,
right,
5 days a week.
Right.
It's amazing.
I would say that at this point in my life, I work harder and more hours than I ever did before I became disabled. You know, I mean, that's just what it is.
Yeah, but your heart's in what you're doing right now, and that, to me,
that's
what makes
it.
All the difference.
That's it. Exactly. I love what I'm doing now. My life is so much better now after I had this, quote, horrific thing happen to me. You know, it was actually one of the best things that could have ever happened to me.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And I turned down some pretty intense, you know, if I wanted to follow down that path, some pretty intense career opportunities. I've actually said, no, thank you. That's not what I want to do. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'll find something else to work around it to make it work.
Yep. Exactly.
You know? And so, it's not about the, you know, how far you can get ahead in life sometimes. It's about how fulfilled you are spiritually, how you are emotionally as a person. And
right.
Are you making a difference in people's lives? Right. So for me, that's what it was all about.
So it all comes down to my old adage, everything happens for a reason. You may not know that reason at that moment in time, but you're going to find it out eventually. And everything really does happen for a reason.
Exactly. And the opportunities that were most recently presented to me are, you know, in the field of things that I love to do anyway. So it wouldn't even be like work if I were to switch from my present thing that I'm doing now. It wouldn't even be like work. It would be fun.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So that's so cool.
You got it.
Where are we going now? I don't even know where we are. We get off on these tangents. So, okay. To-do list for you, and this is gonna tie into my Maggie's moments later on. Start being honest with yourself about everything, and that is a very, very difficult thing to do.
So hard.
Typically, my to-do list for you, you know, or is something fun or easy to do for yourself. You know, go to a park or visit a place that you haven't visited before. You know, spend more time with your family. You know, take a movie day. Things like that typically are what my to-do list for you are about. But this week, I've had so much correspondence. And like I said, we'll get into that with the Maggie's moments. But this latest cause that I've taken up for a couple of weeks, and it's not going to become my lifelong thing because I simply just don't have time to devote for it. But being honest with yourself, that's been a huge, huge pitfall for the people that I've been talking to the last couple of weeks. We get ourselves in a scenario and we want to believe, just as we were discussing earlier, the best of a situation or the best of a person. However, when we fool ourselves into thinking, even if the facts are right there in front of our face, that this is a facade, this is a fantasy, this is something that's not real, and we're not being honest with ourselves, and we fall into that trap of continuing this, you know, fantasy world or fantasy life that really doesn't exist, it can be so detrimental to our emotional and mental and even financial well-being, as well as our physical well-being, because the stress that ensues when we finally wake up and say, hey, you know, I've been fooling myself, it could be very, very harmful to you. So be honest with yourself. And that's a really difficult chore for a lot of us to take on. With every aspect of our lives, you're the only person that you can count on forever, right? You and your higher power. So search your soul, search for the truth, know who you truly are. And once you do that, you'll have a better understanding of where you are now, how you got to this point in life, and where you're going. And it'll help you to be better equipped to identify where you want to go and how you want to get there. And a suggestion from, this was one of the websites that I took, they suggest Breed the Road Less Traveled. Have you read that book? I haven't read that one.
I have, yeah.
Okay, what'd you think of it? Was it a good one?
Yeah, I would say so. It was good, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's important. And like I said, just happened to be, you know, from life experiences, the people that I've had instance to communicate with the last couple of weeks, they're not doing that. You know, they want to live this facade. They want to live this fantasy life. They don't want to believe that, well, particularly speaking, that they're being built, that they're being taken advantage of, that people are robbing them. You know, they want to believe that everything's good and everything's fine. Well, you know, it's one thing to maintain a positive attitude, but it's another thing entirely to fool yourself. And on the outside, you know, if you approach somebody who's totally not attached to the situation in any way, a total outsider, they can usually identify and say, look, you know, I'm sorry to tell you, but I think maybe you may be misled. You may be having the wrong emotional reaction to the situation that you should have. Maybe you're turning a blind eye to some things that, to me, are just like writing on the wall, because you don't want to think that the worst case scenario could be actually what the situation is. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's important. And, you know, I think we're all guilty of that sometimes. You know, we want to think the best and we want to maintain a positive outlook. But there are instances, I think, in many of our lives where we fool ourselves into believing that, you know, a person is in love with us that isn't, or that, you know, we're going to hit the lottery or make $1 million tomorrow when, you know, it's definitely, I mean, it's a possibility, but it's not a probability, things like that. So what have you to say about that one?
Well, I agree 100%. I really do. You know, being honest with ourselves is probably the hardest job that you'll ever do. But it is probably one of the most rewarding things that you could do, because when you are that honest with yourself, when you're that naked with yourself in the middle of the night kind of thing, you know, and just realizing, oh my God, what have I done? Or what am I going to be doing? Or things along those lines. You know, we have so many different things that go on in our brains that allow us to trick ourselves into thinking that we're perfect people, you know, trick ourselves into thinking that there's nothing wrong with us, that it's always the other person or other people that are in our lives that are causing the problems. But in reality, it always takes two to tango. You know, there's always some kind of stem that's going on with issues that are going on between people. And, you know, you could maybe be a little bit more honest with yourself about why those issues are happening, and maybe come to a resolution through realizing, hey, you're part of the problem too.
Oh, you know, and you just touched on something that's really important, is accountability.
Absolutely.
Accountability for our actions is really important. Yeah, there are truly evil people out there. There are people out there that want to hurt us, you know, physically, yep, emotionally, mentally, financially.
There are those out there that want to watch the world burn and take you with it. Yes, absolutely.
However, when we realize a situation maybe isn't as ideal as we want it to be, taking the accountability to realize, you know, I made a mistake, or maybe I shouldn't have engaged with this person on such a close personal level, allow them to get close to me, because if I'd have paid attention to the warning signals a mile away, I would have been able to prevent all of this, you know, personal anguish.
Yeah, and Maggie, you and I have seen this on a daily basis, where people literally go onto social media like Facebook and so on and so forth just to look for an argument with people, you know, just to look for an argument with people so that they can either feel better about themselves or whatever. But what kind of twisted darkness are you letting into your life when you seek that kind of thing out? You know, I can't tell you how many times I've just seen people make themselves absolutely miserable through their interactions on social media.
Well, social media, and that's going to tie into my story later too, is this whole social media thing is, you know, anybody can make a profile and pretend to be somebody that they're not.
Yep.
And a lot of people that are on social media today, I mean, it's a fact. When they're spending hours and hours a day on social media and it's not to promote their business, right? If it's not to promote, you know, their brand or their product or, you know, your books or my business, typically there's a problem, right? Because if you're a healthy, well-balanced person, you've got outside interests. You're not tied to that computer. You know, you go out, you go spend time with your family, you do things outside of the home. And when we have these people that are really unhappy with themselves, that's their whole thing, is to get on there and start an argument and cause disruption in someone else's
right,
life.
Right, because it's transference.
It makes them feel better.
Yeah, it's transference, you know, transferring it from yourself to another person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's see. What else do we have? We have going back to holistically healthy. I chose pomegranate this week. Do you like pomegranate?
No, I will admit I do not like it.
Is it just the taste of them? Is it
yeah,
having to dig the little?
No, it's the flavor itself. I can't get behind it. Those and mangoes. I cannot get behind either of those fruits. I've never been a big fan of them.
Well, they're both very good for you. And, you know, in our tradition, in the Italian tradition, that was something that usually we'd have on the table at Christmas time. And then we would eat them all summer long, you know. But they're a great source of ellagic acid, very antioxidant. They have humic acid. They're an omega-5 polyunsaturated fatty acid. And that's highly beneficial for your cell regeneration and for proliferation. The juice is a really good source of vitamin A, C, and E, and minerals such as calcium, phosphorus, potassium, iron, folic acid, niacin, thiamine, folate, and riboflavin. And they are. They're a pain in the neck to have to dig out and clean. And sometimes you get some really bitter ones. But when they're sweet, they're just, oh, it's the nectar of the gods. Are you kidding me? It's been used for medicinal purposes in the Middle and Far East regions for over thousands of years. It used to be used as a tonic to heal ailments like ulcers and diarrhea. The juice of the pomegranate contains antioxidants, like I mentioned earlier, specifically anthocyanin and ellagic acid, compounds like gallic acids, and flavonoids like quercetin, which offer protection from diabetes, heart diseases, osteoarthritis, and several kinds of cancer. It can help your heart health. By keeping the arteries flexible and decreasing the inflammation of the lining of the blood vessels. It's known to reduce arteriosclerosis, and that, of course, is one of the leading causes of heart disease. It can lower the risk of blockage in the arteries, which can contain a restriction in the flow of blood to the heart and to the brain. So it's definitely got some positive qualities, even if Ira doesn't like it. And this recipe that I had, it's really simple. It's literally four ingredients. It's a smoothie. And all you do is you take 1 cup of the pomegranate juice, 1 6-ounce carton of vanilla fat-free yogurt. Substitute any kind that you like, but the fat-free is what the recipe calls for. 2 tablespoons of honey. That's just to add a little bit of sweetener to it. And 1/2 cup of crushed ice. And all you do is in a blender, combine the juice, yogurt, and honey, cover and blend it until smooth, and then add the ice, and then cover and blend it until it's, you know, frothy, and then drink it. It's amazing. But I won't ask you if you're going to try it because you don't like them.
No, but I will give the recipe to Jolene, and I'm sure she will because she definitely likes them.
Oh, really? Good. Well, that's cool. They actually have jumped substantially in price, just like a lot of our fresh produce has. They're upwards of $2 a piece, I think they are right now. I haven't bought any in the last couple of months. We were going to get them around Christmas time, but the grocery market that I looked at them at, they didn't look very healthy. So I passed at Christmas time this year. We didn't have them at Christmas time this year, but I'm looking forward to the summer when they're in season, and hopefully we'll be a little bit more palatable. It didn't look good at all. They looked like dried out. The skin looked dried out. And, you know, the white part there in between the berries is very, very bitter. If you get a piece of that by accident, that's not a lot of fun. We used to, when my brothers were smaller, because, I mean, I'm the oldest, so when we had them and the kids were smaller, I would actually give them the pieces with the white bitter part.
You so mean.
I did. I gave them the bitter part. I'm like, here, open your mouth and close your eyes. And they'd be like, oh. But it was fun. Let's see, what else do we have? Have you seen this movie that we're going to talk about?
I have.
Okay. If you haven't, there's got to be something wrong with you. Usually we do, this is movies that you've got to see. It's usually a positive and an inspirational story. This one is a classic. Just because I've been on a classic kick again lately, I really love classic movies. You know, John Wayne's my favorite, Clint Eastwood, guys like that. But I picked Casablanca. And I thought it was a positive story, even though the ending is not really what we want to, you know, they don't end up together married and having five kids and 2.5 dogs and all of that. I think it's a great story. And it's got, can you tell me who's in it? Do you know?
Well, of course it's Bogey.
Yeah. And?
I'm trying to remember. Is it McCall? Is the other one, the woman? Shoot, I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Come on, Webby.
Nah, it's been years since I've seen it, so I can't remember for sure.
How about Ingrid Bergman?
Bergman, that's it. Bergman, yeah. Bogey and Bergman.
And Paul Heinrich. And this plays a lot, like, on if you have Turner Classic or any of those. I happen to have it on DVD, so I love it. But it's about World War II. And Morocco is at a waiting point for throngs of desperate refugees fleeing Nazi-occupied Europe. Exit visas, which are necessary to leave the country, are at a premium. So when two German couriers carrying letters of transit signed by General de Gaulle are murdered and the letters are stolen, German Major Strasser and Louis Renault, the prefecture of police, are eager to find the documents. Strasser is particularly concerned that the letter not be sold to Victor Laszlo, the well-known Czech resistance leader who was rumored to be on his way to Casablanca. So that night, Renault and Strasser search for the killer at Rick's Cafe Americain. I love the setup in the movie for that nightclub run by the mysterious American expatriate Richard Blaine. Earlier, Ugart, a shady dealer in exit visas, had asked Rick to hold the stolen letters temporarily, explaining that he has a buyer for them, and with the money from their sale, he plans to leave Casablanca. Although Rick fought on the side of the loyalists in Spain, he's grown cynical, and when Renault advises him not to interfere with Ugart's arrest, Rick replies, "I stick my neck out for nobody." He makes a bet with Renault, however, that Laszlo will manage to leave Casablanca despite German efforts to stop him. After Ugart is arrested, Laszlo and his companion, Ilse Lund, arrive at Rick's. Ilse recognizes Sam, the piano player, and while Laszlo makes covert contact with the underground, Ilse insists that Sam play the song As Time Goes By, which I happen to love that song, by the way. And probably a big part of the reason that I love that is because I was raised watching classic movies such as this. But anyway, reluctantly, Sam agrees, and a furious Rick, who had ordered him never to play the song again, emerges from his office to stop him. Rick is taken aback when he sees Ilse, whom he knew in Paris. Later, after the cafe is closed, Rick remembers his love affair with Ilse. After a brief happy time together, the Nazis invade Paris, and worried that Rick will be in danger because of his record, Ilse advises him to leave the city. He refuses to go without her, and she agrees to meet him at the train station. But instead of coming, she sends him a farewell note, and Sam and Rick leave just ahead of the Nazis. Rick's thoughts return to the present with Ilse's arrival at the cafe. She tries to explain her actions, but when a drunken Rick accuses her of being a tramp, she walks out. The following day, Laszlo and Ilse meet with Renault, and there they learn that Ugart has been killed while in police custody. After Rick helps the young Romanian couple win enough money at roulette to allow them to leave the country, Laszlo, suspecting that Rick has the letters, asks to buy them. Rick refuses. And when Laszlo asks his reasons, suggests that he ask Ilse. Angered when Rick allows his orchestra to accompany a rousing rendition of La Marseillaise, Strasser orders the closing of the cafe. That night, while Laszlo attends an underground meeting, Ilse meets Rick and explains that she stayed behind in Paris because on the day that Rick left Paris, she had learned that Laszlo, her husband, whom she had married in secret and thought dead, was alive. Now realizing that they still love each other, Ilsa tells Rick that he must make decisions for both of them. Meanwhile, the police break up the underground meeting, and Laszlo takes refuge at Rick's. Before he's arrested, he begs Rick to use the letters to take Ilsa away from Casablanca. The next day, Rick sells the cafe to his competitor, Ferrari, the owner of the Blue Parrot, and tricks Renault into releasing Laszlo from prison. They head for the airport, but Renault has managed to alert Strasser, who hurries after them. At the airport, Rick tells Ilsa, who thought that she would be staying with him, that she is to leave with Laszlo because she gives meaning to his work. He then tells Laszlo that he and Ilsa loved each other in Paris and that she pretended she was still in love with him in order to get the letters. Laszlo, who understands what really happened, welcomes Rick back to the flight before he and Ilsa board the plane. Strasser arrives just as the airplane is about to take off, and when he tries to delay the flight, Rick shoots him. Renault then quickly telephones the police, but instead of turning in Rick, he advises them to round up the usual suspects, and the two men leave Casablanca for the Free French garrison at Brazzaville. It is, Rick says, the beginning of a beautiful friendship. So there you go. That's the synopsis. If you haven't seen it, watch it. I've seen it. I don't even know how many times. I love the music. I love the setting. I just love it in general. And it is a really cool movie. You gotta watch it again.
I may. It's been a few years since I've seen it the last time. I think I was, at least 15 years ago that was the last one I saw it. But yeah, I think I will. It's always a good movie.
And it's that eternal, you know, they want to be together and one misunderstands the other, so they're not together. And then they get together in the end, kind of, sort of, you know what I mean? It's a complex, but it's a beautiful love story, I think. So there you go. Comedy Corner. You want to go into Comedy Corner?
Sure, we can do that.
Have you heard of these two?
I have indeed, yes.
I love it. All right, go ahead. We'll have some laughs here. I love the second one especially.
Here you guys go. Enjoy.
My daughter's a different ball game, though. I don't know why, but my daughter got me wrapped around her finger. She's spoiled. I spoil her on purpose. I'm supposed to. I'm dad. Crazy thing, though, she knows she got me wrapped around her finger. Like, she know how to play me and her mom against each other. It's amazing to me. Like, the other day she came into the room, she hit me with the soft voice. She was like, Dad, can I have a cookie? I was like, yeah, baby, come on, let's go get a cookie. I grabbed my daughter's hand, I start walking towards the kitchen to get a cookie. Out of nowhere, all I heard was this: don't give her no cookie. Scared me. I didn't know what to do, I just stopped. I stayed still. Because I didn't know who said it. I was like, Jesus, why would you say that? She can have a cookie. I'm gonna tell you how smart my daughter is. My daughter's so smart. She didn't fall out. She didn't have a tantrum. My daughter looked at me. She was like, Dad, I thought you was the man of the house. When she said that, I didn't know what to do, so I got mad. I snapped. I was like, what you mean? She can't have no damn cookie. Well, why would you buy the cookies if can't nobody have a cookie? I'm shutting the whole cookie operation down. That's what I did. You know how I shut it down? I got the cookies, got a ladder, put the cookies on top of the refrigerator, then I hid the ladder. Reason why I need the ladder, because we small in my house. You need a ladder to get to everything. Don't judge me, sir, just because your arms are longer than mine. I'm a human. You know what else makes me laugh about my daughter, man? My daughter, she got friends now. She had the age where she got other friends. 4 or 5-year-old girls running around the house. I babysit them, I watch them by myself, I don't mind. It's a lot of pressure, though, watching other people's kids. A lot of pressure. Nothing worse than giving somebody back their baby messed up. You ever get somebody back their baby in a condition that they didn't give you that they didn't give you the baby in? I'm talking about to the point where you gotta explain something to them before they see their baby. Hey, wait, real quick before you see your baby. Your baby had 2 eyes, right? Okay, all right. Long story short, gas went off in the kitchen, blew your baby face off. No, everybody else ran except your baby. Y'all don't run in your house? No? That's my thing. I panic too much when it comes to dealing with my kids. And I'm not gonna lie, I make mistakes. I'm not the best parent in the world. I forgot to feed my kids one time. I'm being honest. I don't like to lie. I'm gonna tell you why. PlayStation 3 just came out, right? I'm watching my kids, but I'm playing the game. They crying all day. So in my mind, I'm like, they got attitudes. They spoil. Okay? They spoiled. They got attitudes. I'm not going to deal with this stuff all day. So my lady came home. She was like, why are they crying? I was like, because they spoiled and they got attitudes. That's why they're crying. She was like, well, did they eat? I was like, damn it. I ate, but they didn't say nothing when I ate. They just, you know.
So I made up the list and he left. Well, y'all, I waited. He didn't come back. I thought, he's gone on to badminton. And I thought, no, where could he be? I was getting ready to call the grocery store and I heard the car pull in. He came huffing up the steps, had two sacks and more sacks hanging on his arms. He just glared at me, started putting stuff down, and said, I'll get some more out of the car. I looked in the first sack, there was a pound of margarine and two gigantic bottles of vanilla flavoring. Doling out a half teaspoon a time, it would take forever to get rid of these two gigantic bottles of vanilla flavor. And in the next sack were three dozen eggs. I said, they had a special. I'll tell you, they have had a special. I didn't need but five eggs, and I just said a dozen. In the next sack was a big old thing of shortening, two of them. And in the next sack, two more, 12 pounds of lard. We could fry fish for everybody in here. But in that fourth sack, I found my list, and I'd like to step out of the kitchen just a minute to tell you something. Left Brain is a smart man. He went to Duke University on a basketball scholarship, played basketball for 4 years, and graduated in the same 4 years. Then he went to Carolina and got a master's degree and a doctorate. He has over-degreed himself. But I don't care how many pieces of paper you frame and put on the wall, if you have a left brain, it's going to kick in on you. And it kicked in on him about the third aisle of that grocery store. I'll step back in the kitchen. I found my list, and in my eagerness to make sure that he could get through the express ring, for probably the first time in my life, I numbered the items. Number one, a pound of butter, no problem. Number two, large bottle of vanilla flavoring. I had two of them. Number three, a dozen eggs. This man has a doctorate degree. Number four, a big, big tub thing of lard. I could hear him coming back. I looked down at number five. Said a 5-pound bag of sugar. I knew he was coming in with 25 pounds of sugar. And number six was a 5-pound bag of all-purpose flour, 30 pounds of flour. Now, I believe in accepting things you can't change, but I also believe in hounding things sometimes. And then sometime I let it ride. And this time, y'all would have been proud of me. I let it ride. I put that list behind my back. He came in again, plopping down sugar and flour all over, bam, 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 gets it all down there and says, one more trip. I went back to my list and looked, and number seven was a bottle of 7-Up. I don't want that big bottle because if you're going to make one cake and you just use it, it'll be stale by the time I get back. I told him I wanted a 6-pack of those medium-sized ones hanging. So I knew he was coming back in with 42 bottles of 7-Up. And in a minute, there he was. I had just cleared a space for him right here. Back it up. Put them all down and turned around to me before he left and said, well, obviously, they wouldn't let me through the express lane.
I don't think they would.
Isn't that hysterical?
I love it.
That. And because I found that one, I actually went through and listened to several more of hers. She's hysterical. And obviously, she mentions that she's from the North Carolina area. And, you know, down there, they don't use grocery bags. It's all sacks. And they call the carts buggies. And I remember the first time I went shopping with my girlfriend, you know, years ago, And she's like, do you want a buggy? And I'm thinking, I haven't got a baby with me. Why do I need a buggy? You know? She's like, no, no. And she pointed to it. I said, the grocery cart. She goes, yeah, the buggy. I love that.
That's great. I love people from down there. I had a friend when I was growing up. She grew up from down in that area, and instead of underwear, she'd call them underneath pants. She's like, I need to get some new underneath pants. It's like, what?
I know. My buddy Tex too. When he came here in the wintertime, long johns. They call them long handles.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm like, what? I need some long what? But yeah, it was a good time. I mean, I love going down there to visit, and you know what my plans are, so we won't go into that. But I plan to be spending a whole lot more time in the warmer weather here in the next year. let's see, we've got positive affirmations in scripture. I lift myself and others up when we need reassurance. Again, going with the theme, you know, when you get depressed and you get upset, it's important to not only keep your own spirits high, but if you see somebody that's suffering, we've talked about this how many times, just take that extra minute, lift them up, help them to feel better, give them support, because you never know. It might make the difference between them potentially hurting themselves, committing suicide, or, you know, just having a real emotional breakdown. So lift yourself and others up when we need assurance. I lift myself and others up when we need reassurance. Put it on a post-it note, put it on your phone, what have you, say it over and over. It will eventually become a staple to you. And the scripture that I chose was 1 Thessalonians 5:11, wherefore comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also ye do. So that's my positive affirmations in scripture. I know we've got about 15 minutes, so I'm going to jump right into Maggie's moment. My Maggie's moments for this week is the last couple of weeks, because I've been told by my social media person I need to open up Instagram and Twitter and things like that, stuff that, you know, before I was totally opposed to doing anything like that. On Instagram, I've done actually two shows on the Positude Powwows about Insta scammers, particularly Instagram people who are taking advantage of others with fake profiles, and a lot of them pretend to be fake military people. So they're stealing our military soldiers and veterans profiles and using them to bilk ordinary people out of money, primarily women. And I have to be honest, in most of the cases, it's Christian women, because they feel that Christian women will be more inclined to donate to them, to give to them, to be more generous to them. And so I've done two shows on it, on the Positude Powwows. You can listen to that on www.openeyesnetwork.com, which is Ira's site. You can go into the Positude Podcast and hear the shows on there. And then also on my YouTube, you can subscribe to that, Maggie Hart, or just bring up Positude Podcast, and you'll see all of the shows come up on there, and you can listen that way. But I've had a lot of experience interacting with people that have been taken advantage of by these scammers. And so I started to go in and do some investigative work on myself, which ended up being the two shows in fruition. And a lot of people are being taken for money. And what they do is they ask for iTunes cards and Amazon gift cards. Now, people that are potential terrorists that I spoke about in my first interview with Jennifer from Soldier's Heart, they're potentially using that money against us to, you know, using the phone cards to talk to their buddies in this country. But in the second show, what we talk about is how what the majority of them do is they'll ask you to buy an iTunes card or an Amazon gift card, take a photo, scratch off the back and take a photo. And then there are sites that will buy those cards back. So if it's a $1,000 gift card, let's say, they get $200 is the company's cut, and then they get an instant $800. So it's a really quick and easy for these people to make money. And so I've been working, I just spend maybe 5-10 minutes a day in the course of my really crazy schedule, you know, between working, doing my spiritual warfare, engaging in correspondence, going physically on cases, you know, doing my schoolwork for my studies, between all of that and everything else that I do, I've been taking 5 to 10 minutes a day and going on my Instagram. And when these people contact me, finding out, of course, almost immediately, to me, it's pretty obvious that they're a scammer. And then, you know, blocking them, reporting them. And then in my second interview, if you listen to that, I actually messaged a woman who ended up making it her life's work to bring these people down. So I'll take that information and give it to her. She'll post it on her website and on her Instagram. And then people, you know, hopefully will go to her site as well as some of the other ones that are out there to, you know, see that these people are fraudulent, to see what they're doing. But as a result of that, I've actually had a lot of fun with it. And Ira, I think I'm going to write a book about this. It's not going to be a very thick one, but I've actually had some really comedic relief from some of the people that I've interacted with because, you know, they're foreigners. A lot of them are from Nigeria. Some of them are Russian. Some of them are from Afghanistan or wherever. But their knowledge of the language, of the English language, their grasp of the English language, and the stories that come up with are absolutely hysterical. And I shared some of them on Facebook the other day, but I had one that, you know, within 5 minutes, he was in love with me, and he had a child, and they're all widows. By the way, the males, you know, the proper English terminology would be a widower, but they're all widows. And one of them told me that he had a kid, his wife died, and the child was 7 years old, and he sends me a picture of a blonde-haired, blue-eyed kid on a boat, and he said that that was his child, and that his child loved animals. And I said, well, I hope that he likes ocelots, because what I've been doing is going on there and just feeding them fake information and seeing if they'll bite and then going, you know, haha, I know you're a scam, right? So I told him not to tell anybody that it was a secret, but ocelots, I think, are illegal to own, but that I have an ocelot. And he told me that his kid loves pests, P-E-S-T-S, and his child will be more than happy to meet me and my ocelot. And I'm going to be his new mom, and, oh, we're going to travel the country, and we're going to find ways to make money so that we can support ourselves, because he's on his last mission in Afghanistan or wherever he claims. Oh, no. This one's from West Africa. And so, you know, he's going to take me to West Africa, where right now he is building bridges. And we're going to travel the country. We're going to get married. And we're going to live in his house. And he sends me a picture of his house, right? And it's literally like this huge 4-star motel with the AstroTurf around the pool and the fence. And then he sends me another totally different picture of the front face of a mansion. And they're two separate colors. So I said to him, you know, are you colorblind? I've had a lot of fun with this, you know, with catching these people. One told me he was Burn, B-U-R-N, in the UK, which is why he couldn't speak good English, because, you know, nobody speaks English in the United Kingdom. And I told him, I said, well, you were Burn in the UK. That must have been painful. I'm very sorry for you. A lot of them claim to be medical surgeons or orthopedic, and they always misspell that word surgeon doctors. They're not just an orthopedic surgeon, but they're an orthopedic surgeon doctor. And I actually had one guy tell me that he was trying to tell me that he was a psychiatrist and an orthopedic surgeon doctor. But he spelled psychiatrist, misspelled orthopedic surgeon. And then I said to him, well, you know, you must have gone to college for 20 years to achieve both of those degrees. It's really too bad that you failed at spelling. Then there was another one, claimed to be an orthopedic surgeon doctor. That was like that week I had like five that claimed to be orthopedic surgeon doctors. And I said to him, wow, you know, that's the fifth one this week. This must be a very popular profession. Shut him right down, dead silence. He didn't know what to say. And then about 3 minutes later, he changed the topic of his conversation. He just totally changed the subject and got away from that. So what I started to do was telling them, when they told me that they were an orthopedic surgeon doctor, was that I'm in the medical profession, and there's truth to that. I've been in the medical profession for years, but that I was a medical consultant. So when I started to ask them any sort of technical questions, right away they'd shy away, and you'd know, aside from the fact that they didn't speak English. The next one, I actually beat him to the punch when he asked me what I did for a living, I told him that I was an orthopedic surgeon doctor. Dead silence. It took him like 10 minutes to try and think of another profession. Another one that they claim to be in is construction, oil drilling. A lot of them claim to go all over the world building bridges and roads in countries where there are no sources of water. Yeah. So, you know, they're building bridges for what, the zebras and the giraffes or something? I don't know. But it's been really, really funny, funny times. There was another one that he told me that he, oh gosh, he they're all widowers, as I said, but they claim to be widows. They tell me, well, the one guy from England, for example. Okay, so he was born in the UK, but he lived in the States. But he was half Mexican, half America, no N, right? And so I asked him, you know, Burberry's a plaid. So I asked him how he liked Burberry pudding. It was his favorite. And a way that I have fun with them is I'll ask them things like state nicknames. There was one that I asked, you know, he said he was originally from North Carolina and then moved to Missouri. So I said to him, well, what do you think about bullion? Because one of the Missouri state nicknames is Old Bullion. And he silenced. So I could tell that he was Googling the word. And then he came back with, I really like gold and silver. Gold and silver, I wish I had a van full of it. So I said, well, show me. What do you think about show me? Because that, of course, is another state nickname for Missouri. And he's like, oh, you want me to show you? So here I am, and I'm kind of second-guessing myself at that point. I'm thinking, some of these guys will send you pretty raunchy pictures.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's opening up a door. That's opening up a door right there.
So I'm like, but now here I'm finally like going, oh, don't send me a picture. Don't send me a picture. And then he just came back with, oh, you want me to show you? No, gold and silver. And I'm like, no, no, bullion. Yeah, yeah, I really like gold and silver. So the guy from the UK, how do you like Burberry pudding? I love it. Well, you know that I love music. So I said to the one guy, well, you know, in order for it to be a real match and for it to prove to me that it's true love, you'd have to like the same kind of music that I like. Who do you like? Well, I like blues music. Really, you like blues music. Who's your favorite blues artist? Michael Jackson. So I threw at him Don Williams, and he said, I love Don Williams. He knew the most popular song by Don Williams, and then you could tell he was Googling up. I asked him about, like, Jeff Healey Band. You could tell he Googled up a name of one of the songs that was lesser known. It wasn't Angel Eyes, which, of course, was their biggest hit. And then he, I said to him, well, my buddy from Texas, my older buddy, that you've heard me talk about lots of times and I've talked about on my other shows, is he's older. So we were talking one day about the Traveling Wilburys, and he knew the music, he knew the songs, but he was calling them the Traveling Wildebeest. So I said to the guy, do you like the Traveling Wildebeest? He's like, oh, yes, It Must Be Love. They're my favorite group. And I'm like, really? Earlier in the day, do you remember that movie, The Full Monty?
Yeah.
It came out years ago. Well, that was in my head. I was thinking of that movie, and I actually have it on VHS, and I was thinking about rewatching it because it was hysterical. So I said, well, have you heard of their song, The Full Monty? Yes, that's my favorite song, It Must Be Love. So in the course of my exposing these guys, I have had so much fun, but also as a result, I have to admit, I've been able to talk to some people, and also this woman, I gave her a fake name for my second show because she didn't want to give her name out because they actually found where she lived. One of the scammers, it took her 3 months to shut down his Facebook and his Instagram profiles. And he found out where she lived, and she actually got a dozen roses on her doorstep the next day from this guy. So that was to me, a very valid threat. You know, I'm sending you flowers, but I know where you live. You better watch out. And that guy actually had scammed people at her account, just the people that reported to her, over $275,000.
It doesn't surprise me. It really doesn't. So many people fall for that kind of scam. It's crazy. You know, it reminds me too of the whole email scams, you know, the Nigerian princesses and all that, you know, are leaving $3 billion or whatever. And you need to, you know, I'm going to give you half of it and you keep me half of it and blah, 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 blah. You know, there's this guy that's out there. His name's James Veitch. He kind of makes a career out of screwing around with people that do that kind of thing. And I remember there was one time he was talking about this particular email scam that came in, and he started, you know, messing around with them. And it got to the point where he set up an autoresponder email to their autoresponder email. And he said that they've been sending these two email autoresponders have been sending auto responses back and forth to each other for like the past year. And it's up to like, you know, 20,000 email responses back and forth to each other. And he's like, you know, it kind of makes me feel a little satisfied that if, you know, the world was to come crashing down and, you know, everything, you know, ended, there'd still be these two computer systems talking to each other, you know, over autoresponders for the rest of eternity, you know, on and on and on. That's what it all reminds me of, really.
That's hysterical. And like I said, I've been able to, I feel that at least if we block and report one of them, a lot of these guys have 10, 15. There was one guy that I was looking at. He actually had over 50 pages open just on Instagram.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we can just shut them down one at a time, or at least report them one at a time, yeah, Instagram, Facebook, they don't check into all of those. That's
no,
obvious.
They don't.
But
and the
if
way
we're
I...
able to shut down just the, you know, the fact that if we're able to shut one of them down and the fact that they have to take the time out to create another fake one, that's something. You know, and it's
right.
Helping somebody who would potentially be a victim on that particular site. And to hear these women's stories, it's absolutely heartbreaking.
It is. It really
what
is.
What some of them have gone through. There was one that this lady who's opened up her site, the lady was actually ready to commit suicide. And it took her a couple of days to get the story out of her and for how much money she was bilked out of. And she's made it a habit of just messaging her once a day to make sure that she was okay. But my coup d'etat, my favorite one of all is the one with the ocelot, with the kid who's died, whose mom's died, that we're going to get married. He's going to take me all over the country. And by the way, for his purposes, I live in New Jersey, right? Sent him a picture of a house after he sent me a picture of his. And, you know, we're playing that whole game. And there was another one that came on when he was messaging me. And this guy was, like, disgusting. I mean, you know, not that looks should ever, I don't consider looks when I look at a person, but the first thing this guy did was send me a picture of him naked, you know, up to the waist without a shirt on. And it was like, I had just eaten dinner. I was like, it was disgusting. So this guy's like coming on hard and fast. He was one of these that automatically, hey, beautiful, look at me, you know, and I knew it would be a matter of minutes before he'd ask me for money. But what I actually did was I asked Ocelot guy, who's in love with me and we're going to get married and move to his house in Miami, Florida, when he gets back from West Africa on his last bridge building mission. He's going to retire after this and we're going to start a business and we're going to seat down. So when we seat down, you know, to me, the first thing I thought of was, well, his mom taught him bathroom manners. He's going to put the seat down when we go to the bathroom, right? Because the guy, it's hysterical. But we're going to seat down and we're going to think of a way to make a lot of money. We're going to bog. So I'm thinking to myself, the heck is bog? We're going to go into the cranberry business? What are we doing over here? But I'm laughing at this guy, right? And I'm having fun with it. And I said to him, you know, you're the love of my life. You're the man that I've been looking for, you know, but this other guy's messaging me and he's bothering me. Can you do something about that? And of course, you know, because he's a scammer, they don't want to interact with other scammers.
Yep.
Right. So I'm like pressuring him. I'm like, listen, you're the love of my life. I've been alone for so many years. You need to be a real man. You need to step up, protect my honor. I want you to tell this guy to leave you alone, that I'm yours. So he gets back on in like 30 seconds. I got him, baby. I messaged him to leave you alone. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah. So now what I've been doing, that's my new thing, is I've been having them fight amongst each other.
Yep, yep. There you go.
Yeah, and yeah, you know, go ahead and tell him you're my boyfriend and to leave me alone. It's hysterical. I have so much fun with it. And I am. I'm about 99% sure that I'm going to write a small comedic book on this. What do you think?
You said, absolutely. I'd love it.
I think it's hysterical. So be careful out there, people. Know that people aren't what they say. But, you know, at the same time, we can have fun with this, right?
And then,
Mama Mia.
For every minute that you keep them busy, that's a minute that they're not scamming other people.
Mama Mia. Parlare fiore dai da dente. So to speak outside of one's teeth, again, keeping with this concept, to say openly what's on your mind. So it's the opposite of speaking through clenched teeth, as it were. You speak what's on your mind, you say what you're thinking, and don't restrain yourself from seeing what you really think. And then dente avvelenato. So that doesn't really easily translate into English. It basically means I have a poisoned tooth. But what the phrase implies is when I speak about this topic, be aware that I'm foaming at the mouth, angry about it. And anything that I say is going to be colored by that. So those two phrases were words that came to mind that my grandma used to use in regards to these scammers. And so that's why I chose them for this week.
And that's
all I have for you. We're over time, I know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Maggie, for all that you do. This has been a great show, and hopefully everybody out there had a good time with it. I know I did.
Me too, Ira. Thanks for everything you do, and we'll catch you all in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening.
Have fun and be safe out there, folks.
Hello world, hear the song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.